The Athletic.
Hello to you all and welcome to the 58th edition of On The Ball, a Norwich City podcast from The Athletic. I'm Michael Bailey. I hope this finds you safe and well. On the way, skip to the good bit, Toddtastic and Jan The Ball City. I reread that a few minutes ago and realised it didn't work, but I've gone with it anyway. We will work through all that and more with our guests this evening. Norwich number wang chief at NCFC Numbers, also known as our very own Steve Sanders.
Hi, Michael.
And making his On The Ball debut, it's sports broadcaster and journalist Michael McCann.
Hello, everybody.
Thank you for joining us, guys. Much appreciated. How are we? Steve, I'll come to you first. Are you good? And also, before you answer that question, are the stats flying? Because I know, you know, the first year you really had a go at this, it was like, wow, these numbers are huge because everything's going so well. And then obviously the Premier League was just depressing.
Yeah. And,
you know, difficult numbers. Well, you know, we're back on the good side now.
Yeah, it's probably somewhere between those two stools, to be honest. I think it's going well, but can I be a bit
picky?
Can we just score a few more, break a few more records and that, you know, am I asking too much?
They're not excelling at either end of the pitch, are they?
No, but, you know, I was spoiled the first season, I admit that. Can I just ask about Jan The Ball City? What is that a reference to? I was just trying to scratch my head. Are we saving that as a treat for later?
It's no tease. We will be talking about the transfer window in a tick and the potential signing of Dimitris Giannoulis, because you've twigged it's not Giannoulis or Giannoulis, which I said in my video. I know Michael came. Michael, I had a quick chat with you earlier, and also I spoke to a Greek friend a couple of days ago and literally got him to tell me it. Was very, very helpful. Michael, your debut. Hello there. How are you?
Hello. I'm good. The first thing I have to hone in on is I reckon Steve's ability for this numbers lark is going to be really tested when Norwich end up at some point having some inevitably drab mid-table championship season. That's where the metal's really going to be tested. Like, it's all exciting at the moment, the Farker and Weber era, it's all happening. History shows, and Steve is a numbers guy, that inevitably at some point Norwich will be back in the championship having a mid-table season. And it's when they are 12th in March that you will turn to Steve and say, right, this is where you earn your corn. And long may it not happen, because there's already been too many years like that in my relatively young life when not commentating on championship football.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I mean, my whole bedrock of Norwich City season ticketing as a supporter was basically 9 years of mediocrity. And they only got promoted after I went on a trip to India halfway through the season. It's a story I've told before, but not on The Athletic. So maybe one day. Michael, did you have a good weekend? You were busy doing some good work for Sky Sports Football on Sunday, and you were at the game at the weekend.
Yeah, I did. So I did the Norwich City Cardiff game, which actually sort of dovetails quite well with this. And then the highlights went on Sky the next day. And I'm not just saying it because you've invited me on here in any kind of pressure, given the regalia that you've got behind you. But that first half performance, I think, was the best I've seen from Norwich this season. Oof. That was quite something. You know, they let them back in, which is a very Norwich thing to do. But it was a joy to behold and see in person. But again, it's a theme, and I've got a couple of numbers on it that we might come back to.
You know, I'm going to cut you off. I'm going to cut you off there, Michael, because you know what? We're not going to talk about that, or at least we're not going to talk about that yet. I'm going to hold you on. You do this because I haven't written it down. If people want to follow you on Twitter,
@ this is McCann. Completely generous.
Love it. Seamless. Love it. Get following Michael. Right. I tell you what, we're going to crack on with this week's headline act. It was a long trip for myself. I do wish all of you fans could have made the trip as well, but alas, it was one of those weekends where I had about 6 ideas of what to write after the game, and most of them then weren't going to work. So that's a little insight into my job. So Monday morning, awaiting you, was a keen eye on Oliver Skipp's performance at Cardiff, some Tottenham context, and perhaps a question that I'm starting to give more thought to now, which is what happens next season. You can read my piece on The Athletic, and if you're not already a subscriber, you can sign up to all our content right now for £3.99 per month. Just visit theathletic.com/NorwichPod. Let me get a handle on this, Steve. How good is Oliver Skipp really?
I think he's tremendous. I probably would have said the same about Tom Tribal before I saw us play in the Premier League last year. So I'm sort of reluctant to go too overboard, but I do think he's up there with the top. He's in the top three of the all of our players this season in terms of performance, I would say, so far. I think it's his energy as much as anything else that really impresses me. I was looking at the minutes that everyone's played this season in the Championship, and he is fifth, the only player under 21. Max is obviously ahead of him and has just turned 21. And I think we've been looking for years for somebody who can do that screening job that Tetti does, but still have the kind of confidence on the ball that Tetti doesn't, but that Tom Tribal did. We may have found that in Skip. It's just a shame that he's not our player and we may only get to enjoy him for 1 year. But to me, he looks like somebody who will have a future in the Premier League without question.
It's a tricky position, isn't it? And it's been a tricky position for Norwich pretty much since Alex Tetti arrived, because it has really been Alex Tetti's kingdom. And even though sometimes they've maybe needed to upgrade it, they've never really found someone who could either do the job or someone, and I'm thinking of Ibrahim Amadou here, really, who the manager has enough faith in.
Yeah, they've been very aware of the need to... It's almost become a bit of a running joke. You know, Alex Tetti has had his detractors. Can somebody replace him? Back he comes. Can someone replace him? Back he comes. And you blink and you miss it. And he's got 250 plus appearances. It's not that Alex Tetti's done a bad job, but as Steve eloquently said, it's the ability to break a press with a pass that really, amongst other things, separates Skip. And actually, I read your piece, but as you said, a lot of what Skip does, you can't actually really quantify in stats. He's not that type of player. You also remember the assurance that he gives to the centre-halves behind him. And then he almost looks like he's kind of growing up week by week in the Championship. Not that he ever didn't look like he belonged. The main example I'd cite, seeing it on Saturday, was the second yellow for Marlon Pack. He knew exactly what he was doing. He drew him in, nudged the ball away, knew the challenge was coming, took the tackle, took the hit. He's very brave. I mean, he's taken some horrific tackles already this season, but he knew that by taking that, he was going to leave the ref with absolutely no choice by not actually jumping out the way of it at all. Draws the second yellow, and that seemed to kind of end the bulk of Cardiff's... They still obviously had chances going forward, but it really took the sting out of something of a recovery, because Norwich then had that extra man. And as they like to do anyway, late on in games, we're better able to keep the ball and then see it home.
Yeah, it was a huge moment, actually, because the dynamic of the game was quite awkward, and Kiefer Moore, the tree trunk that he is, was causing all sorts of issues. Ollie's a brilliant one. I mean, Marlon Pack was just desperate to two-foot someone all game. That was what he sort of set out to do, I think. Really interesting with Ollie. The thing I probably not appreciated as much is the versatility on the pitch. You know, he will sit in at right back if he needs to when Max is pushed on, which I guess with Tom Tribal would exclusively pick the ball up between the centre-backs. And it was very predictable, whereas Ollie will be much more diverse in where he is. You know, sometimes he will be covering on the other side, and actually, even though Kenny's left-footed, Kenny McLean, they would switch sides. As I said, he'd drop back at right back, which would sort of add a different dynamic and empty the middle. There's, you know, a lot more versatility in what Ollie does. I mean, he is only 9. Is he 19? Did you say? Sorry, you did say, Steve. Is he 20 now? So I mean, you can see how raw he is. I mean, he's played 2,000 minutes this season, and I think he only had 700 for Spurs in senior games before that. So this is a huge contribution to his professional career. You know, there wasn't much before it, so you can see how raw he is. And actually, in a way, the weaknesses have come from just positionally switching off, or just the lack of experience in the role. But in terms of his actual assets, I really think they're all there, and how well he can break forward with the ball, and his sort of ability to pass the ball and knowing where it's going without necessarily having to look there first. You know, we've got the pitch mapped in his head, which I think is something, again, you do well to find a stat on that or an analytic that picks that up. But it's all those little things. And I have to say, Steve, that the way it's working with Kenny McLean, and I know a few other people have picked this up, is really dovetailing well. And as I did in my piece, you know, Kenny also deserves some credit for that. I think this is the best he's... I know he played well a lot of the time last season, but I genuinely think this is his best run of form for the club since he arrived.
Yeah, I think he's been brilliant recent weeks. I think I spoke about him last week and said how good he was there, and I thought he was fantastic in the first half on Saturday. Big part of the second goal, obviously. I suppose to bring it back to Skip, obviously he also had that partnership with Rupp, and I thought at the start of the season, well, these will be on midfield too for the rest of the season. So he has been able to dovetail quite well with whoever he's been put in there with. And I kind of think, you know, I remember seeing him making the old cameo appearance in the All or Nothing Spurs documentary and go, oh, there he is, he comes now. But I do think he's the sort of player that Mourinho really liked. The energy being one of the reasons he can get up and down really well. I thought he was fantastic in that Stoke game where we were down to 10 men and he was bounding up and down the pitch. And the other memory that really sticks in my mind is a slightly specific one. But it's the Sheffield Wednesday game. And I remember it because it's the only game I've been to in the flesh this season. But we were 1-0 down and they were breaking away maybe with 15 minutes to go. Skip brings a Sheffield Wednesday player down. Sorry, I can't remember the name. With essentially a professional foul. It's a yellow card foul. He knows what he's doing. He's taking the man out. And obviously we then, I think within a minute, 2 minutes, we'd equalise, and within 5 minutes, we were 2-1 up. And I think back to the Premier League season where teams were running all over us and we were kind of allowing it to happen. The first Watford goal, when Buendia gives the ball away, there were about two or three challenges could have been made from the halfway line. And I thought of that moment and thought, that's what we've been lacking. That's what we've been lacking in the last couple of years. We need somebody who's not afraid to do that. And Skip's got that in his game as well. And I think, unfortunately, he may not go far with us, but I do think he will be part of that Tottenham squad next season if they want him.
I mean, that's definitely something Jose's going to like, a rugby tackle if a team's coming on the break. And yes, obviously, my piece does touch on Ollie Skip's future. I think we know a few facts, don't we, Michael? I think we know that Jose really likes him. We know that Jose said that Ollie Skip is staying with Norwich for the rest of this season, which is, of course, key and great news. He has said that he will be back with them next season, which I take as that's clearly how it's going to start. I think the general consensus is then they'll have a look at what their midfield is like at the end of the window. But I suppose the difficulty for Norwich is that if they, say, do go up, which is what we're talking about in this context, and they wanted Ollie Skip back, they'd probably want an early decision because they're not going to want to hang around until the end of August. So it's tricky, really tricky, because you'd love to have Ollie back if Norwich go up. But I don't know if I can really think of a scenario where it happens.
I think if you're Skip, you're naturally, if you come out of this season, as we're assuming, with a championship winner's medal around your neck.
And, oh, yes.
Well, no, because if you've got that championship winner's medal around your neck and you've been consistently playing as one of the best midfielders in the division, you are well placed to go back to Jose Mourinho and say, hey, I deserve a crack at least being around your matchday squads. And from speaking to a few people, he's someone that's naturally very ambitious, and why shouldn't he be? And so I just wonder whether for him, from a selfish point of view, Norwich City supporters might not want to hear this, is actually that he goes and proves that he's someone that's capable to go back to Spurs and at the very least be in and around squads and actually playing a significant amount of minutes, as opposed to being the guy that maybe plays one game a season. And so from that point of view, combined with the deadlines that you mentioned, I would say right now, even in that world, it looks relatively unlikely. The only thing that might count in the favour of it, if Skip goes and has pre-season with Spurs, and as can so often happen with these young players, Spurs then decide actually they've got better options, or they make a big signing in that position, which the amount of times you see these clubs who look theoretically well-stocked in one position and then go and still decide to spend a lump of their transfer budget on that rather than a less well-stocked position doesn't cease to amaze me. And then maybe you get a scenario late in the window where Skip, potentially something unexpected happens. Norwich, as we know, under Farquhar and Webber, like to do their business early, but I think they would make an exception for a player that's contributed that exceptionally. And they'd say, actually, look, are Norwich likely to by then have got two players in at his level or better? Difficult to imagine, given that Norwich wouldn't exactly have the biggest budget in the world. So I don't think it's impossible that even if it didn't happen early in that window, it could still not yet happen.
Jose said how important it is that he's experiencing winning games. I mean, if he spent next season in the Premier League with Norwich, the chances of it that being the case would be obviously a bit more limited. We'd have to see. But by the same token, he's been here, and I think Daniel Farquhar has a great reputation for what he's doing with people. It does kind of feel though, Steve, that in terms of Norwich, if they were being savvy, they would be already looking at a shortlist for a defensive midfielder for next season.
Yeah, and I'm sure there will be. Regardless of which league we're in, we're going to need a replacement for Skip. That's what it sounds like.
Alex Tetti, maybe.
We have to be thinking bigger. And I think what they, let's say, we do have championship medals round our necks, not us obviously, but the squad, come next season. I don't think we're going to be seeing another last-minute loan, let's put it that way. I do think they will prioritise it this time, knowing that that was one that they got wrong last time.
Jacob Sorensen, I'll mention him because he's obviously being looked at as a number six as well. And there are obviously other players. But yeah, read the piece. It's on The Athletic. Enjoy it. I'll tell you what, I think we're going to move on to this now, which is things we are not going to talk about. Yes, counterintuitively, these are the things that have happened and deserve acknowledgement, but we are only going to acknowledge them by stating how we are not going to talk about them. Makes sense? Of course it does. And also, we only have 3 minutes to do it. And wonderfully, producer Tom has got some dramatic music ready to go. Cue music, Tom. Right, this week we are not going to talk about, he says, victory. Norwich won and Cardiff. It was a wonderful win. The table's looking good, although there are teams with games in hand, so it's worth bearing that in mind. But certainly in terms of PPG, which we should be aware about, points per game, Norwich are doing remarkably well, but we're not going to talk about that.
Buendia to Arsenal.
Ozil's left, so they need a...
That definitely means they're going to sign Emi Buendia. Like, talk about the dictionary definition of false equivalency. But anyway.
I don't think it's any coincidence that Arsenal can suddenly pay off Mesut Ozil, having just received a massive bank loan. So the idea of them then using that bank loan to spend 40, 35, however much you want to say, million pounds on Emi Buendia is...
Well, I did have a friend who wanted to do yet another interview with you about it, Michael. So I was going to
send him your way.
I know you love talking about it.
I'm available in February. February the 3rd. February the 2nd, I reckon. Anyway, we're not going to talk about that. Bali Mumba, Xavi Quintilla, they both tested positive for coronavirus. We, of course, wish them all the very best. I think Norwich are up to 9 positive tests now. But hopefully Tim Krul, I think he's feeling better. I think he has tested negative. So I would imagine there is a chance he could play against Bristol City. But we're not going to talk about that. And I'm also speculating.
I think we need to talk Todd as well, because he was fantastic on Saturday. I know that...
No one can see my face.
Yeah, I'll drop you in it, Michael. I know we have slightly different views on this one, but in my opinion, he was best player on the pitch on Saturday.
Well, I find it really difficult. So he was really good, and there were lots of players who were really good. I just, the stuff about him being unplayable, I mean, if he'd scored 2 or 3, he had some great chances, and, you know, there were some great efforts there, but, you know, if he just hit one of those on target or ping, I don't know, I just feel unplayable was a bit of a stretch. I do not want this sounding like I felt that he was bad, because he wasn't. He was really good. And the fact that he's finding his rhythm, I find a lot of joy in.
It's not so just the rhythm,
I'm in the middle.
I think the work rate, to me, was yes, incredibly impressive as well. He was really chasing down lost causes until... did he get subbed off in it? I think he played 90, didn't he? I thought that to me, was the real standout thing. It's a shame we've mentioned Emi before Todd again.
Oh, well, you know, that is a different argument, whether Todd gets a rawer deal than Emi, but there we go. We're not going to talk about that. Michael?
Norwich City, 16th in the Championship for shot conversion. Very wasteful front goal. And if that doesn't change in the Premier League, it's difficult to necessarily see a different result. One of the very common conversations is, you know, what needs to change to basically next season, if they were to go up, to find a way to stay up. And right now in the Championship, they're the 5th highest scorers in the division, and they've got the 5th leakiest defence. So they're doing this weird thing where they're finding a way to win games, and it's very commendable, but they're still offering you a chance at the back. And they're still finding a way to score goals whilst creating a ridiculously amazing amount of good chances and not taking them. And we know next season, factually, they won't be able to do that, because it's a much higher quality of football. So without needing to be too much of a Debbie Downer, that's what they would have to change next season. And actually, oddly, they might be top and in this great position. I still don't think we've seen the best from them yet.
No, I would agree with that, definitely. And Daniel Farke has definitely been asked about the shot conversion. I mean, I think they need a striker, but I'd just like to throw in, I thought Jordan Hugill played his best game in a Norwich shirt on Saturday, but we're not going to talk about that. And I think that's everything on my list, apart from well done for protecting Daniel Bardon, because I thought it was a few moments where he looked a bit raw on Saturday, and Norwich did a good job of protecting him. Loved his hair, by the way, obviously, so won't get called Screech anymore. And Timo Pukki's side strain. Bit worried it's going to be more than like a few days, but hopefully not.
Yeah, but then you're right. Hugo did a good job. I have one more thing to throw in because yes. I didn't use it the weekend, but there were a ridiculous number of free kicks in this game. Cardiff committed 26 fouls. I was looking back. No one has fouled Norwich City more than 21 times in the last 5 years, and Cardiff did it 26 times, and there were 41 fouls altogether. I don't Amazing. Know if anyone cares about that, but just as you raised it with Pack about Marlon Pack going around two-footing everyone, I think they all were.
You know, it's interesting, that doesn't surprise me, because watching the game in that first half in particular, it did feel like Norwich just had the ball until somebody got chopped, yeah. and that's it. The only other thing I'd throw in, which is a more obvious one, which goes back to exactly what I said about they offer you a chance at the back, but they find a way to score goals. It was yet another 2-1 win. It's the score that's so unsurprising because it so suits this Norwich side. They can't quite keep it shut at the back, but they've always got a threat in them, and they'll create that many big chances that it's kind of law of averages that eventually at some point someone will take one.
Just on the fouls, I think it was a mix between, I think there were one or two Norwich bought, I have to say, and I know the local radio was saying as much. So there's one or two they bought. And also Cardiff assumed you could slide straight through the back of people because they just kept doing it, and then would get up going, oh, what do you mean? I got the ball. I mean, obviously I went through his ankles, but it's fine. So, you know, we were on a mix of that, but that is a great stat. Well done, Steve. Right, I tell you what, we've got this, the welcome edition and return of Centrefold. This is just a chance to flag up, really, my piece on Ben Gibson at the end of last week, where basically so far this season he's been the Championship's best defender with the ball at his feet. So we're going to ignore the defending. I'm not saying he's been a bad defender, by the way, just to clarify. But he has definitely been the best defender with the ball at his feet, which is probably why he's keeping Christoph Zimmermann out of the team, to be honest, because that's a big call in itself. He's certainly impressed me, I think, probably beyond what I was expecting him. And he does kind of feel quite an astute signing, doesn't he? Looking again, we're getting so far ahead of ourselves, we can barely see ourselves in the distance, Steve, but you know, it'd be a decent Premier League season for like £8 million.
Let's look at the other scenario. We don't go sign him anyway. I just don't think, you know, I know that's a lot of money to throw at a centre back, but it's been another problem position for us in the last few years. If they don't gonna go up, they're gonna get a load of money for players anyway. I don't know what the finances look like at the club, but I do know that you ain't going to get a better centre-half than Ben Gibson. I just think he's fit into, you know, he's a perfect fit for us. We're a perfect fit for him. He looks like somebody that's capable of making the step up. The stats bear out, I think, what Norwich fans already think of him, which is that he's brilliant with the ball at his feet. I actually think he's a cut above Zimmermann. Zimmermann's older than Gibson as well by 3 days, but he is older. So they are an equivalent age. You know, I was thinking when we were talking about Skip, when was the last time we had a loan as good as Skip come to Norwich? And I think you could ask the same question about Gibson. They should absolutely sign him next summer.
I hadn't really thought of this, I have to say, but I think it'll be incredibly hard to sign him if they don't go up, I must admit, because I don't think they'll have the money. And I think effectively what the deal has done is set the price for him. And if, say, I suppose if Norwich, say, finish fourth and don't go up in the playoffs, there will be a lot of teams who'd probably, he's done so well. You could say now he's done so well this season that he's going to be quite attractive. Yeah. Obviously not just as a man, but as a footballer. So, you know, we'll have to see. I hadn't really thought of it. And then you said it and I was like, So let's just ignore that possibility and assume Norwich get promoted, because that's what we've done for the past 25 minutes. Obviously, that brings us on to the January transfer window, which is obviously flying. Such an exciting period of time. I think we can all agree it's just an absolute joy of stuff. Norwich's goalkeeper search is remaining quiet at the moment. I think the way I see it at the moment, Tim Krul, obviously, once he's back, that will be great. Daniel Bardon could probably back him up. You're just going to have to hope that Tim Krul wouldn't be out for an extended period of time if you don't get anyone else in. That's when it's going to start getting twitchy. And we know Steve thinks that it would be a misguided scenario to not bring in someone to cover. But it's quiet at the moment. What's not quiet is Norwich's new left back, who is in the process of being signed. I don't think it'll have been confirmed by the time you listen to this podcast, but Norwich are, of course, at home to Bristol City on Wednesday. I think we're going to be pretty close to that. Michael, you've been doing some digging. No one wants to hear from me, so let's hear your digging.
I have, yes. Dimitris Yiannoulis. So
there he is.
He's, well, set to sign by this point, might already have done, in a similarly structured deal to Gibson. So it's a loan with an obligation to buy for around $6 million if they're promoted, which, again, it makes a lot of practical sense. He's a natural left back, which is what Norwich have been craving due to Kintia's absence due to injury and then, of course, COVID. You know, Sorensen has filled in brilliantly, and Farker, I know, did say that he now considers Sorensen a long-term left-back option, but that's by no means his premier position. He was, you know, he's been thrown in and done a very good job. But a team misses out, particularly a Daniel Farker team, in the way those wing-backs are so important and were with Lewis and Aarons, when you haven't got that left-back that can naturally go and hug a touchline. He's a left-back that's probably more in the mould of what one might expect of a Daniel Farker left-back than, say, Javi Kintia. He's not someone that's inclined to cross very much. He's someone that likes to dribble. He likes to get forward. He's very aggressive. He can fly into challenges. And early on in his career, did have a bit of a bad run of some pretty poor sendings off. But that has, by all accounts, stopped in the last two or three seasons. He's got very good work rate and excellent stamina. The main difficulty he's going to have is obviously adjusting from the Greek Super League to the Championship, two completely different things. All the normal cliches about different area, different region, different style of football, etc., etc., etc. But the deal makes a lot of good sense for Norwich. He's been playing regularly. He's been playing very well, and has been widely acknowledged to be one of, if not the best, fullback in the Greek Super League going. And it's seen as a very, very good deal for Norwich and a very good fit for both parties. By all accounts, he'd been wanting, and his agent had been trying quite avidly to get him onto more mainland European shores in towards your traditional stronger leagues. And this, from their side, is seen as a chance to be a Premier League player in 6 months, a chance that other Premier League clubs weren't willing to go and, say, take on him. And so the chance for him to come here, stake a claim, play every week, you know, beat Javi Kintia to that left-back spot and then make that deal permanent and be a Premier League player is what's brought him here. And I think it makes a lot of sense for both parties, assuming that it goes ahead.
I would imagine there will be some sort of piece on The Athletic over the next week or so. So I'm sure we're going to address this whole subject next week in next week's On The Ball pod. Michael, beautifully put. I have to say, yeah, I mean, it does sound like they're getting a Premier League player and they're going to get a few months to condition him in the Championship, which I think is really astute. And they're very excited. They're really excited about the quality of player they're getting. I mean, it's I suppose you have to see how these things always unravel, of course, and what we get. But yeah, very interesting. Steve?
Can I just ask the quick question? And agree, that was really, really interesting what Michael had to say there. But to you, other Michael, what do you think this will mean for Javi Kintia for the rest of this season?
I don't think the loan will end like immediately. I don't think, unless something really drastically happens and toys get thrown out of the pram. I don't know. I suppose someone could offer Xavi somewhere where he might get regular football for the rest of the season. Because I guess that's the sort of, you don't know if Dimitris gets injured or anything like that. You know, Xavi could get the opportunity. I think if I was Norwich, I would be sitting Xavi down and say, look, we're bringing him in, but you know, you're both here, you've both got the opportunity to fight for it, and whoever stays, and if we go up, you're going to get a contract, so off you go. So there's that element, and I think Norwich would kind of need the support, I suppose, the cover of two natural left backs, which they haven't got, especially while Sam Byram can't get back fit. And the other thing I would say is that they're both very, like Michael was saying, quite different in terms of what they deliver. So I think that's a factor as well.
I do think Yiannoulis fits much better, though, with the style of play that we've seen from Daniel Farker. Javi Kintia is not a natural dribbler. He's someone that likes to tee the ball up, level with the edge of the penalty area and fire a crossing, which doesn't really fit with the way Norwich like to play, even when Jordan Hugill tends to be on the pitch, although that does give it a slightly better natural link up. And I might be wrong, but I don't believe that the Kintia deal has a clause that means that even if they go up, it has to be made permanent. Correct. Whereas, say, with Yiannoulis, if they go up, my understanding is that the way the deal's structured is it has to be. So my inclination is that they will then look to promote Yanis where possible and give him the chance to impress. It slightly reminds me in a way, although it's a different scenario, of the Tim Krul, Ralph Farman situation in the Premier League. They would probably prefer the player who they're possibly going to go on being obligated to sign if they go up to be the one that takes on the spot. And so he's coming over and he's fit and ready to play. And my inclination is that relatively soon they will look to get him involved. And that if the signing goes through, that Barnsley Cup game could actually be the perfect time to give him a debut and see what they've got from him. Kinsella could still fight and win his place back. It's not like he's a bad player, but in the style that Norwich play, he maybe doesn't fit quite as well as what Yanis will give them. The other thing that I forgot to mention that I've just seen down at my notes that's really important is he's really quick as well. Which, again, that you can totally see why they've signed him from speaking to quite a lot of people in Greek football. He fits the mould of a Daniel Farke fullback. And providing that he matches the form that he's shown in Greece, then he'll be a good asset for them.
Well, that's brilliant. Obviously, there's a lot to happen over the course of the week. Keep an eye on theathletic.co.uk and the Athletic app, because I can assure you if anything happens and if there's anything of concrete note, I will be breaking it and you'll be able to catch it there. Okay, this is Just Like Fantasy Football, to paraphrase the famous Norwich City commentary line uttered by John Motson during the UEFA Cup run.
This is almost fantasy football.
We are recording as we usually do on a Monday, but it's a busy week again with Norwich hosting Bristol City in the Championship on Wednesday night. It's a 6 p.m. kickoff and it's live on Sky in case you wanted to follow it. Before an FA Cup fourth round tie at Barnsley on Saturday, that's at Oakwell, 3 o'clock kickoff. So what I wanted to do is paint a picture of the forthcoming 7 days. And then what we are doing is basically giving you the opportunity out there to laugh at us with our picture with the valuable gift of hindsight. Sorry, it's a bit stuttery there. It's turning into a Boris Johnson speech, but I'll reel back on that. So let's predict it then. Bristol City, FA Cup, then joy of or not at Barnsley. What's going to happen over the next 7 days? Michael, what can you visage?
Bristol City are thoroughly inconsistent and away from home recently. They've been not great, lost 4 of their last 5, and they've not even been traveling to the more difficult places, having had a stroll through. That's not too much of a disrespect, but in terms of table-wise, I would go that Norwich will beat Bristol City, but that both teams will score. I would probably, if I had a house, put it on 2-1. You've been doing that season, you probably have a few houses by now, to be fair. And then as for Barnsley in the Cup, I think the priority for Norwich is just basically play a slightly weakened team. It was a question I was going to throw back to you two. If you were offered 3 points or fifth round in the Cup at home to Chelsea behind closed doors, is there any doubt as to what you'd choose?
Not for me. 3 points.
Well, yeah, 3 points initially, but then the FA Cup's a bit... Well, basically, what I would say is the FA Cup is a bit of fun and I think Norwich will go up anyway. So, you know, we're so cocksure of ourselves at the moment.
Because the Chelsea game isn't even in front of fans.
I don't want them playing Luton again. I've got to be honest. I've had enough of Luton this year.
They beat Bournemouth. They're particularly at home. They're a real spoiler, Luke.
What I will say about Bristol City that I heard on, I think it was on the Quest highlight show, is that they have won every game that they've taken the lead in or scored first, I think, this season. So I reckon that Norwich are going to concede first yet still win. There you go. That's going to be my picture painted. Carlton Morris, I reckon he could get his first start, you know, for Barnsley. He came on against Swansea. Obviously, he's now a permanent signing there. Go on then, go and predict something for us, Steve.
I predict that by this time next week, we will have seen the return of Onel Hernandez. I'm not prepared to predict whether he will have bulked out even more in a good way than he seemed to, like Hulk style.
He was huge at the start of the season, wasn't he? He was bulky, yeah. I wonder if he'll get like 2 minutes.
Another thing, just quickly on Onel, which I don't like to tweet about these things, but we have a terrible record when he plays recently. We have not won in something like 25 or 30 games, or we've won one in like 25, 30. I think he played in Huddersfield and we've not won other than that in any game he's played in for ages.
Was he still on the pitch when they scored against Huddersfield?
No, that's a very good point. That was the other thing. He wasn't on the pitch for the winner in that game as well. So he's got a bit of a point, on a serious note.
Ouch. There we go.
Sorry.
Savage. And Steve Sanders' job as Onel Hernandez's agent has just finished.
What a loss that will be to him, I'm sure.
The only other thing I'd throw in is Valerian Ismael has probably got Barnsley playing as similarly as anyone in the Championship to Daniel Farke's Norwich. They don't necessarily have the same strength and depth in players, but in the style and the way they go about it. The two of them actually did all their coaching courses together, and they had like a sort of three-hour chat on the pitch after Norwich played them earlier this season. So I actually think they could cause Norwich some real problems, and particularly if Farke decides to rest some of his sort of star players as such, that I think that would be a very tricky trip. And I actually would say that particularly depending on who Norwich choose to rest, which with their eyes on the league will probably be quite a few, I'd argue that's pretty much a coin toss, if not if Barnsley choose to take the cup seriously, which given their league position, they're so bang mid-table because of how Ismael's picked them up. I actually think I'd give them a strong chance of winning that one.
What impressed me about Barnsley down here at Carrow Road was they kept going. I think they finished quite strongly and they still had a bit of energy at the end of the game. We'll see how it goes at Oakwell. It should be a good game. It was definitely a good game at Carrow Road. So, well, there we go. No one's committing to whether they'll be in the fifth round again. So we'll skip over that and we'll wait and see. Right, I think that's time. Brilliant stuff. On the Ball will be with you all season long, of course. So make sure you subscribe via your podcast player of choice. The podcast is available free for everyone on your usual podcast player and ad-free to subscribers of The Athletic via our app. If you like what we're doing, leave a review and a rating where you can. And of course, please spread the word of our efforts across the Norwich City world. If you'd like to get in touch, ask a question or propose a topic for discussion, sling me a direct message on Twitter and I'll try and make sure I can pick it out in between all of the Twitter transfer accounts that are trying to contact me to tell them what to tweet. In the meantime, a big thank you to our guest tonight. That is Steve Sanders, of course. Thank you, Steve.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Michael.
And a wonderful debut from Mr. Michael McCann. Thanks, Michael. We'll do it again.
My pleasure.
Brilliant stuff. I'm going to take that as a yes, we're going to do it again. Yeah. Good. We'll be back again next week with another On the Ball, a Norwich City podcast from The Athletic. Until then, never mind the danger. And we're clear. There we go. Welcome, gentlemen, to Wits End. Michael, are you happy with your podcast debut? I thought it went very well.
I don't think it's for me to comment on that.
Fair enough. Steve, did you think Michael did all right?
I don't think it's for me to comment on that. No. I thought it went very well. It's nice to have some proper insider there called Michael, you know.
Someone who knows, like someone called Michael, who knows.
The only thing I will say is I definitely talked more sense than the first time I met Steve, which was coming out and doing that piece from the away end after Norwich had beaten Spurs on penalties, where myself and a certain Scotsman were shouting a lot of things that weren't really words, just utterly sort of jubilant at that ridiculous game, which looks even more ridiculous in the context of what happened next. It's one of those memories. I've listened back to that a few times from the penalties and the rest of it, being like, did that really happen on March the 4th? Like, given, you know, anyway.
You're right. That was the last time I saw you in person because we were all hanging around outside the stadium afterwards. You can actually, so this isn't actually your debut on the podcast, was it? Or that wasn't, because you were on it in a recorded form at the end of February, early March, I think. So go and listen to that podcast and you'll be able to hear Michael and Hodgie from inside the away end. It's a lovely little section of what it was like to experience that. And I remember interviewing Tim Krul and he was recording some of his best saves. We were discussing them all, and then we went through his penalty shootout. And that's such a surreal thing to watch now, and to have had those 9,000 Norwich fans at that game and everything around it. I mean, well, yeah, I don't know if I've got the words to put it down to what.
Yeah, well, actually, us reliving that has made me think I was a bit quick to poo-poo us getting into the FA Cup fifth round, but then I suppose
you took the points, didn't you, Steve? Just took the points and ran. Norwich maybe getting 3 points somewhere else.
But the difference is this time you get to Chelsea at home, and it was such a shame with that Man United home quarter final, because that game is without a doubt totally different on a Saturday evening with Carrow Road full rocking, etc., etc.
Bringing on 8 subs. And then they only won it in extra time, didn't they? Thanks to a massive Tim Closer error. Anyway, good going by Todd Cantwell in that game, by the way. Anyway, everyone, welcome to Wits End. Welcome, all you Twitterkers. Hope you enjoyed that chat. I hope you feel a part of it. If you've only stumbled across this for the first time, make sure, and you don't know what's going on, which is understandable, go and listen to On the Ball podcast number 42. It went live on September the 8th, and it is all explained there. You can email this section of the podcast directly. Just email Twitter, K-E-R-S. So you think I know that off my heart now. Twitter, K-E-R-S at iCloud.com, or on social media, preferably Twitter, because I probably don't check the others. Put whatever you want, but use the hashtag Twitterkers, Twitter, K-E-R-S. Just don't explain what it's referring to in general, because this is Secret Club. You've discovered us. Well done. You're a part of it. This week, the outstanding twitterkers.co.uk, not my doing, someone out there has created our own website. It's truly essential viewing for all Twitterkers. The defeat clock is now up to an impressive 22 days. So that's 22 days and counting since Norwich last lost. So long may that one continue. Also, there's a yellow ticker along the top, which whoever creates this website, they've added a yellow ticker as if a breaking news, as if, you know, sort of parodying Sky Sports. The interesting point on that is that I got a tweet today from Thomas Lover. I hope I've pronounced that right, Thomas, saying, I just visited the Twitterkers website and saw the breaking news, which I think says Emi Buendia has signed a £5 million deal to move to Arsenal and Mikel Arteta is going in the opposite direction. And Thomas was like, he freaked out, he had a panic attack, researched, and then was relieved. Quite an eventful evening. Cheers, lads. You're welcome, Thomas.
I'm pretty sure I asked for them to put on that website last week to say that Emi Buendia was going nowhere, and I don't think that's happened yet.
It's on there.
Oh, it is on there.
Apologize. You're right. They have put that on the breaking news ticker, but then underneath, I think they've literally put a screen grab of your tweet or someone's tweet. Let's have a quick look here. No, they've got your quote. Mark my words, Emi Buendia will be here in February, it says. And then there's a screen grab of one of the accounts, which is Emi Other Business on Twitter, saying that Emi is definitely not leaving. So there we go. Thomas, I hope you're okay. Steve, it's all right. Your prediction is there and we'll be definitely coming back to it on February the 2nd or whenever the pod is after that. So where are we? Yep. So visit twitterker.co.uk. It's a wonderful website. We've also on there, we'll wait to see if Dimitris Yanoulis looks delighted to sign, if there is a signing picture, if there is one, because that can then add to the one on there of Ibrahim Amadou. He doesn't look as upset as some people I've seen in their signing pictures. There's a little bit of a turn up in his this corner of his mouth. I always remember Sebastian Bessong particularly looking a bit disgusted with the shirt he was holding up.
That was how he looked, I think. I don't think he ever looked that enthusiastic about anything, did he?
Well, that picture doesn't exist anymore. I even went on the Norwich website and there's no picture attached to it.
There's a story there, Michael.
Who knows?
Do a bit of digging. Either Michael, do a bit of digging.
Yeah, you can do that one, Michael. Now, Chillaxgate. Exciting news. I hope you enjoyed it last week with the Paul Lambert clip. I hope you were able to listen to it. The sound quality wasn't great. I did mention, you know, maybe the audio of the original mention of Chillax and then the abuse I got from, well, not abuse, but, you know, how Adam Drury and Simon Lappin reacted to it. Well, I found it. I did post it on my Audio Boom account at the time. And so I'm going to play it for all for you here. This is the original and origination of Chillax. Enjoy this, everyone. And we will never speak of it again afterwards.
And a personal note, will you find it okay with Christmas? Because as you said, you probably had Christmas Day to yourself and Christmas Eve and chillax and, you know, have a turkey and all those kind of things.
You say chillax?
I didn't mean to. But, yeah.
Chillax!
It's my girlfriend. I've gone red now. I've got a problem.
I mean, that's continued out, though. You're terrible.
For Christmas, yeah, anyway, will it be
chillax?
Intensity? Will be different.
Yeah, it's going to obviously be a lot different for me from a personal note, but, you know, we're professional, we just deal with it as it comes. He's still on about that.
Oh, no. Getting a reputation.
Training hasn't been full, but at least you're in fine fettle at the moment and good spirits after Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, when you're winning games, it breeds confidence, and obviously the way we've been playing of late, we've been playing very well. Although first half we didn't play great the other day, second half we come out and got a great win. And then hopefully that goes on from there, you know, it sort of gets the pun snowballing from there.
Nice. There's a bet there somewhere.
It's better than chillax.
Yeah.
Oh. Yes.
Yeah, it is. You're right. So carry good. On.
It really tickled me, that.
I did love it. Shocking.
Right. Where were we?
Football.
Super, thanks.
Looking back at how the year's gone, are you sort of glad that you did stick at it and work and sort of get your head down here?
Yeah, definitely. I said all along I wanted to be here, and I never chillaxed. I just kept my head down and worked hard all through the kind of time I was out of the team, and it's kind of bore the fruits now, but I'm back on the side and I'm enjoying every minute of it.
Fantastic. Well done. Good work. No problem.
Walked at it that way.
Well, there we go. As I said, the last will ever speak of it. But it was, of course...
I don't think so.
It was... I love the way that I tried to blame my girlfriend. That was a which I thought was particularly harsh. Now my wife, so she probably doesn't know. Yeah, and obviously the first clip is me speaking to Cody McDonald, and I was standing next to Grant Holt. So that was my first mistake.
That was Holty's voice in the background, was it?
Grant Holt, yeah, deciding that he should pick up and run with that. And obviously it was the first Christmas Cody McDonald had been a professional footballer. So, you know, it's quite a keen all round. But there we go. What an exciting set of audio clips that was.
I particularly love Lappin's because he didn't even try and disguise it. He obviously went in there immediately knowing that he was going to stitch you up, and he did. Fair play to him.
He did, yeah. And we laughed heartily. all thanks to Ollie, who asked the question obviously originally, and I'm going to remove any future apologies to Ollie by answering all his questions now in his email. Remember, you can all email us as well, twitterkers@icloud.com. First thing he does say, apology accepted. So thank you, Ollie. That's a nice thing to say. He also casts a vote that he definitely wants me to write a song for Paul Lambert as my next TikTok video. So it looks like I'm going to have to get on with that one. Melvin City, he says he's intrigued, just as he hasn't been making any appearances yet. I don't know if the club have made a judgment on where Melvin City is. I must admit, Ollie, I know that he's been injured. The fact that he hasn't been playing at Telstar is across the season isn't great. If he does say it's Telstar, they'll be assuming that he will get some game time in the second half of the season. So, we'll watch it carefully, really. But it wouldn't be great if he doesn't feature for them all season. Emmy other business? We've run out of time. It's we're not good. No, Emmy other business. But an Ollie Skip song. Someone come up with an Ollie Skip song. Maybe I would like an Ollie Skip song before I've managed to write a Paul Lambert song and published it on TikTok. And maybe we could publish the Ollie Skip song on TikTok. Maybe that's something I could do with that. Right. You know the hashtag Twitterkers. Twitterkers at icloud.com is the email address. Michael, thank you so much again. Much appreciated.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Top man. Steve, pleasure.
Cheers, Michael. Just going to chillax for the rest of the evening now, I think.
Thanks for that.
I knew he was going to do that from when he said it was an ending, so I left it for him.
The Athletic.